So thank you. Thanks a lot, Eli, for the invitation, for the organization. I wish I was there with you, but I have some family constraints, small kids at home. It's not easy to travel, but thanks a lot for organizing the workshop in a hybrid format. And it's really nice to be there, even if only online. So I'm going to talk today about a variation of the standard Bell scenario, which I call the rooted Bell scenario. I'll tell you in a second what this is about. This is based on very recent work in the past few weeks with two of my PhD students, Edwin Peter Lobo and Jeff Powells. So let's start with the standard Bell scenario, which you all know about, right? So I go quite quick. So we have a source that sends some quantum particles to Alice and Bob with measurement device. So they have inputs, which are measurement settings, and outputs, measurement outcomes. And the causal structure of the experiment is represented here on the right by this DAG. And if we have binary variables, so all variables take value 0 and y, then we know that for classical models, we have a constraint, which is the CHSH inequality. So this probabilistic expression is bounded by 2. But quantum models can violate this inequality, and the quantum bound is actually 2 square root of 2. Okay, so we have this classical quantum gap, and this is really nice because, you know, it allows us to certify quantumness from data alone, from the statistics produced by the experiment, without having to assume anything about the implementation, anything about how the device behave. This is what we call device independence in quantum information. And a violation of the CHSH inequality is not only a test of quantumness, but it actually provides us with much more information on the underlying quantum realization. So for instance, we can relate the degree of violation of the CHSH inequality to the amount of entanglement produced by the source, or to how much the measurements are incompatible or some other quantum properties. And if the violation is close to the quantum bound, we can even, you know, identify precisely the state produced by the source and the actual measurements which are implemented in the devices. And this is what we call self-testing. And self-testing, it's really powerful and can be exploited to certify the proper behavior of entire quantum information protocols, for instance, of device-independent quantum key distribution. So we can have a protocol where the secrecy of the keys shared by Alice and Bob is guaranteed through the violation of a Bell inequality. Okay, so this is very nice on the theoretical level, but when we go in the lab and we try to observe or produce this quantum correlation, we are faced with an issue, which is that particles get lost. So if Alice and Bob are far away from each other, we're going to send quantum information by encoding it in photons, and we're going to send these photons through, say, an optical fiber in or free space. But then these photons, they will get absorbed in the fiber or scattered, and so there is a high chance that they will not reach the measurement device. Okay, so we can define on the left-hand side of the experiment a detection efficiency eta A, which is simply the probability that the photon gets detected by the measurement device. And similarly, we have detection efficiency eta B on the right-hand side. And the fact that this detection efficiency are typically, subunity or when quite small, the effect of that is that it will lower the CHSH value. And if we start from an ideal realization where, the source produces a 2-qubit maximally entangled states, A and B do the standard Pauli measurements. And so if we add on top of that losses, then we can compute the resulting CHSH value through this formula. And it is represented here on this picture where, you know, on the x-axis, we have the detection efficiency of Alice, on the y-axis, detection efficiency of Bob. And the red zone is the zone in that space where we have a CHSH value which is above the classical bound. And you see this only happens in a small corner. So we need typically efficiencies of 70-80% to be able to violate the CHSH inequality. But in typical experiments, you know, we are in the white zone. This is a problem, and this is especially a problem if you want to establish long-range quantum correlations because losses increase with the distance and increase exponentially in fibers and quadratically in free space. So it's a very, very big problem for any, application based on locality, like device-event quantum key distribution. And we like to find some way to overcome that. And so it is in this context that recently there was a paper by Chaturvedi, Viola, and Pavelski, where they proposed an interesting idea that could potentially solve this problem, or at least improve a lot the situation. And the proposal was to consider this rooted Bell experiment, which I'm going to introduce now. So what is a rooted Bell experiment? So it's a Bell experiment. So we have a source that sends some quantum particle. So Alice is measuring this quantum particle, and it's also sending quantum particles on Bob's side. But on Bob's side, you know, the measurement can be done at two different locations. One location which is close to the source, and one location which is further away. And then there is a switch that will route the quantum particle either to the measurement device, which is close, which I'm going to call BS, where S stands for a short path, or it will route the quantum particle to the measurement device, which is further away, which I'm going to call BL, where L stands for long path. And this decision where to route the particle will be made through some new input variable Z, which takes two values, S or L. Okay. And of course, as any Bell experiment, there are some causality constraints. So whatever happens on Bob's side should not influence what happens on Alice's side. So in particular, the way the measurement device determines its outcome is independent, on Alice's side at least, it's independent on the value of this switch variable. Okay, so this is the setting that they consider. And in such rooted Bell experiments, we can now compute consider two CHSH quantity, a short path CHSH quantity, which involves Alice and the measurement device close to the source, and a long path CHSH value, which involves Alice and the measurement device, which is further away from the source. Now, if this were a usual Bell experiment without the switch and without the short path Bob here, the condition to rule out a classical model and to establish that there are really long-range quantum correlation between A and BL will be that this CHSH inequality is violated, so above this bound two. But what Chaturvedi, Viola, and Pavelski argue in their paper is that if we observe a violation of the CHSH inequality in the short path, then this will weaken the condition for ruling out classical model in the long path CHSH test. So specifically, what they show is that in any model where the measurement device which is far away from the source is classical, so in any model where this measurement device produces its outcome without any quantum particle actually reaching it, in any such model, the value of CHSH is not bounded by two, but is bounded by this expression, which involves the short range CHSH quantity. Okay, and so I've plotted this relationship here. And so, you know, 2 is the usual classical bound. And what we see here is that if we observe some violation in the Sherpa BAL test, then this classical value goes down. So for instance, if you in the middle, we observe a violation of 2.4, then, you know, the classical bound of the long path experiments, not 2 anymore, but something like 1.5. And as you increase this CHSH value for the short path test, the classical bound for a long path goes down, and it goes to 0 when you observe a maximal violation in the middle. So why is this interesting? Well, it's interesting because remember, there is this relation between the CHSH value. So given this fact here, you know, we can ask now, if I give you some efficiency for the property which are close to a source, what are the value of the efficiency for the measurement device that's far away from the source, such that we are above this classical bound, right? And so we can turn this relation in the diagram, which is here. And so what we see, so the red zone is the zone where we violate this classical bound. The dashed line is what we have for a standard BAL experiment. This is this little corner I showed before. And so you see here that there is a region where we get, you know, some huge improvement. So if we have a high quality CHSH test for parties which are close to the source, and this is something that we can achieve today with current technology, right? If we put Alice and Bob distant from like a few hundred meters, we can reach a pretty high detection efficiency and high CHSH values. Then we can tolerate detection efficiencies for the measurement device that's further away, which are much, much lower than in standard BAL experiments, and which can actually be made arbitrarily small if we increase the quality of the CHSH in the middle. Okay, so this is very, very interesting result, which could have a lot of application. But I didn't tell you why do we have this trade-off between these two CHSH values. So let's try to get some intuition for why this is the case. Consider first the short path CHSH test. Okay, so let's say we observe a violation of CHSH inequality. So then, you know, we know that some quantum common cause is necessary to reproduce that. We need entanglement between Alice and Bob. Now let's look at the long path CHSH test. And let's say we observe some value which is below the classical bound. So usually we will say, you know, there exists a classical explanation, but is it the case here? So can we actually get this value without any quantum particle reaching the faraway device? Well, to answer that question, we're led to consider a hybrid quantum classical causal model, which is the following. So X, A, Z, Y, B are the observed variables, are represented by squares. And then we have some latent nodes represented by circles. Lambda are some latent classical variables, which can influence both Alice and Bob. But then we know, because we observe a violation of CHSH when the switch select the short path, we know that we also need some quantum common cause between A and B. However, we are going to
go back one slide forward. We're having like the diagram didn't look totally well for us on Zoom.
Excuse me?
Could you just move your slide back one? Yeah, there you go. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
It's good?
Yeah.
Okay. So we have this quantum common cause, but here there is something special, is that we can have an arrow from Q to B only if the value of Z is set to S. If the value of Z is set to L, so if the particle is actually rooted to the long path, we would like to consider what happened if there is no arrow from Q to B. Okay, so we have a kind of funny causal structure here where the arrow between nodes depends on the value of some variables. I don't know if there is some nice way to depict that. Of this has been considered in some other context. I will be happy to hear about it if it's the case. It's the first time I encounter this kind of causal structure, but I think it's clear what I mean, right? So now,
so Stefano, can I ask a question? So
yes,
in
sure.
In this, you make some assumption on the switch in itself, right? So maybe you are assuming that this is indeed a switch. So when I take Z equal S, there is this rooted which is happening, or is it device independent?
No. So I forgot to say, but the switch is completely untrusted as the source, the measurement device. So it's not trusted at all. Okay.
Okay.
I don't trust the switch. No. It's completely untrusted. I have some variable Z, which I can set to S to L. I observe some correlations. And now I'm trying to see, can I explain this correlation if when I set Z to S, there is entanglement between A and B, but when I set Z to L, there is no entanglement between A and B, okay? That's what I'm trying to do. Okay, and so now we can ask, what is the maximal value of the long path theory CH given some, violation for the short path theory CH? And to make things simple, let's first assume that we observe the maximal quantum violation in the short path, okay? So what does that imply? Well, very standard, result, self-testing results tell us that if you have a maximal quantum violation of the CHSH inequality, then Alice device must implement Pauli measurements on a two-qubit maximally entangled state shared with Bob. And this device should be independent of any other degrees of freedom in the universe. In particular, it should be independent of these additional classical variables, lambda. Okay, so it means that I can actually, without loss of energy, remove this arrow. Okay, so the fact that I observe a maximal violation between A and B tells me that A can actually not depend on this latent variable, and so I can remove this arrow. And so the what does that imply? Well, if I look now at the joint distribution probability when the switch is set to L, you see now that A and B are causally disconnected, and so the joint probability factorizes. The second thing that also I can also conclude from the fact that I have a maximal quantum violation is that the outputs here of Alice are locally uniform, and so the probability distribution for Alice is just equal to 1/2. Okay, I assume A takes two values. And so I conclude from maximal violation that the joint distribution in the long path has this form. And if you plug in this kind of joint probability distribution in the CHSH expression, you will see that you get zero. There is no other possibility. What happens now if I don't have the quantum maximum? Then you can be a little bit more quantitative. Then you can deduce that.
We lost you.
You lost for about 1 minute.
Okay, we, 1 minute.
No.
30 seconds.
We understood.
Okay. So you can do. Okay, I mean, I guess you heard the intuition when you have the quantum maximum
yes.
violation, and you can put some deltas and so on, epsilon, and do also things when you don't have the quantum maximal variation, and you get this trade-off.
Yeah.
Okay, so what I've done so far, I just summarize the content and the results of that paper. I don't know if there are any questions before I go on. No, good. So now what I'm going to show you is a counterexample to this this result. Okay, so I'm going to show you the usual local bound two, even if the short path usage value is equal to 2√2. Okay, in contradiction to these trade-off relations that I just presented. So how does that work? Well, let's first look at the short path CHSH test. So I'm going to assume that the source produce the Feipel state, maximally entangled two-qubit state, and it's going to do sigma z, sigma x measurements, Bob usual sigma z plus sigma x and sigma z minus sigma x measurements. And so we get this 2√2 in the middle. So let's look at the interesting situation, the long path test. So of course, the source and Alice have to behave in the same way because what they do, you know, is independent of what's going on Bob's side. But now what happens when this when Bob's particle is routed to the long path? Well, what happens is that just after the switch, I'm going to assume that it gets measured in the sigma z basis and some value b is open. Okay, so I have a measurement that's happening just after the switch. You can also think about some a model where there is some kind of collapse, spontaneous collapse when, you know, entanglement get distributed below some behind some distance. So let's say that entanglement doesn't survive past this, the particle get measured, right? In a sigma z basis, and we get some classical outcome, right? And then this outcome is transmitted to the faraway device by a purely classical means. So there is no quantum channel, no, just a classical channel. And then what the measurement device does is that whatever the value of y is, of the input is, it will output b, okay? Okay, so no long-range quantum correlation, no entanglement between A and BL. And so what kind of correlation do we get? Well, you know, if here x is set to zero, Alice is measuring sigma z. If y is equal to zero, well, effectively, Bob is measuring sigma z. It's always measuring sigma z, right? They're sharing a Feipel state, so they have perfectly correlated outcome, E equal B. If x is zero and y is one, again, they're measuring sigma z, perfectly correlated outcome. If Alice is measuring x equal one, so it's sigma x, then we have sigma x, sigma z, no correlation at all. So we get this correlation. If you plug them in the CHSH expression, you get two, okay? So here we manage to reach the usual local bound in a model where there is no entanglement between A to BL, right? And BL is a purely classical device. And there is no quantum channel that connects the switch to BL. Okay, so now, given this counterexample, we can ask what went wrong in the analysis of Chaturvedi, Viola, Bazowski. What's wrong with the intuition I gave you a few slides back? So I showed you this causal diagram here, causal structure, and you see here that according to this causal description, no matter what the value of the switch is, information that's necessary determine the outcome both of the device which is close to the source and the one which is distant from the source. Information they need always coexist at the same time, okay? So the device which is close to the source needs the quantum particle. and the device which is far away needs this classical variables, and they always coexist in experiment at the same time. So it means that, you know, starting from a model here, I can build an extended model where I have made a copy of these B variables. So I have now a kind of causal structure, a tripartite causal structure, where I measure, I have a variable XA, YS, BS, YL, BL, and I can define a joint distribution for this DAG, joint distribution, which is such that when I marginalize over the short path or the long path values, I get the long path or short path value of the original model. Okay, I hope this is clear what I mean. Okay, so when describing things here in this way, Chaturvedi, Viol, and Pavlovsky are implicitly assuming a tripartite causal structure, but the experiment is actually bipartite. So in my counterexample, it's not the case that this information coexists in a way that it allows to determine the outcome of both measurement devices at the same time. Either the particle is measured here, and then it's not available here, or it's measured on the right-hand side. So I realize that I'm pointing stuff, but without the pointer. So either particle is measured here, and it's not available here, or it's measured here and it's not available there. So I cannot, my example cannot be set up in this kind of tripartite setting. What happens here is that when you know, we impose this causal structure, we are adding on top of a assumption of classicality, on top of the assumption that the long path measurement device is classical, we are implicitly adding a monogamy assumption, because quantum correlations, as you know, are monogamous. If we observe, you know, that the marginal of some tripartite correlation is highly correlated, then the other marginals have to be weakly correlated. And it is this monogamy assumption which is actually responsible for this long range, short range trade-off. Actually, if we were to consider this tripartite experiment, but a fully quantum one, the exact same trade-off would also be true. And it was actually already derived in 2006 by Bentoner and Frank Verstraat. Okay, so it's really not the fact that we are assuming that the long path device is classical that gives us this trade-off, but is the monogamy, you know, of correlation. And it's due to the fact that the causal description assumes too much, and it's equivalent to assuming some kind of tripartite causal structure, which is not satisfied in my example, right? So I cannot represent this as a tripartite experiment. It's a bipartite experiment, and the right side particle is either measured one place or the other. Okay, so that's what was the problem with the analysis. So now we can ask how to formulate general models that exhibit only short-range quantum correlations, so where the distant device is classical. How can we formulate this? Well, it's not really difficult. So let's just start with first a fully quantum model. So I don't assume to start with that BL is classical, so everything is quantum. So in that experiment, I have a joint distribution PABXYZ, and I can write it in this way. So as usual, the trace, the state produced by the source, the local measurement device. And now I have to add something, which is, you know, if the particle goes through the short path or long path, the state on both sides will get modified. And so the effect of the switch and the path and the channel that the particle takes will be described by some CPTP map CZ. So it depends on the value of C, okay? Equivalently, you know, I can move this transformation of the quantum particle depending on whether it goes to the longer path or short path, I can move it inside the measurement device. And mathematically, this corresponds to looking at the action of the adjoint of the CPT map on the measurement devices, right? And so if I do that, the description I have is just, you know, the usual bipartite Bell experiment description, where now the input on both sides depends, it's not only given by Y, but also by Z. And so I have some effective measurement operators which describe the combined effects of the channel, which can depend on Z, and of the actual measurements which are made, okay? So when everything is fully quantum, this is just a regular bipartite Bell experiment, and I can use usual tool like, you know, NPA and so on to characterize correlation. So now, how do I formulate the idea that this measurement device here is classical? Well, that there is no quantum correlation being transmitted through this channel. Well, I simply need to impose that the CPTP map corresponding to the case where Z equal L is entanglement breaking. Okay, it destroys any entanglement that could have been produced by the source. And if I look at the adjoint map and its action on the measurement operators, then the resulting effect is that it will make the effective measurements jointly measurable. Okay, so it's not complicated to see. I don't have the time to go through this, but there is a very nice paper by Matthew Poussier where he explained this link. And so again, this kind of rooted Bell experiments can be described as standard bipartite Bell experiments with a pair of inputs, with the additional condition that when Z is equal to L, the measurement operators are jointly measurable. What does that mean? Well, it means, you know, that if I look at the two measurements I can do here for Y equals zero, Y equals one, well, if they are jointly measurable, there exists a single measurement that I can do that returns a pair of outcomes, where one outcome corresponds to the outcome for the Y equals zero measurement and one outcome for the Y equals one measurement. And of course, the single measurement, which doesn't depend on Y, can be done just after the switch, will produce a pair of values, then these pair of values can be classically transmitted to the Faraway measurement device, which will then, depending on the value Y, decide which one to output. Okay, and the counterexample I gave was, of course, of that type. And so this correlation I get in this experiment, you know, there I can characterize it again through some standard application of NPA or this kind of tools. Okay, so now we understand how to describe this correlation in some efficient way. And so the last question we can ask now is, if we take this right description of this rooted Bell experiment, can we find a situation where Bell violation in the short path weaken the condition for a classical model in the long path? The example which was provided by Chaturvedi, Viola, and Pavzolski, we've seen it's not valid. There is a counterexample to it. So if we look at the CHSA violation, you know, for the long path test, this will not work. But we have found that for other inequalities, short path test will indeed weaken the condition for the long path test. And here's an example. So let's start with the long path experiment. Let's assume we have a source that distributes a 2-qubit maximum entangled state. And let's assume that Alice and Bob both do measurement in the Z or X basis, okay? So we can build some probabilistic expression here, which I call ZX. What is that? This is just measure how much the outcome of Alice and Bob are correlated when they do the same measurement, okay? And obviously for these correlations here, you'll get a value of two, okay? So if we measure X equals zero and Y equals zero, We're measuring sigma z on a maximally entangled qubit, so a b perfectly correlated. Same thing if we measure x equal 1, y equal 1, x on a maximally entangled set, a and b are perfectly correlated. So this takes the value 2, okay? But we can get this value 2 also for classical models, you know, simple classical models, only one where a and b are always equal to 0. Then we also reach this value 2. So this is not a Bell inequality. There is no classical quantum gap. However, if we now put in the middle a switch and an additional measurement device, and when we route the quantum particle to this additional measurement device, we do this z plus x, z minus x measurements. And so if we test CHSH here in the middle, what we see is that there is a trade-off between the zx quantity, which is not a Bell inequality in the usual sense. So there is a trade-off between this zx quantity and the CHSH value given by this inequality, okay? So this is this describes a part of an ellipse, and I've plotted this here. So remember, 2 is the classical n quantum value in a standard Bell experiment, but now when we see some violation in the middle, the classical value for zx goes down, actually. And so we can use it to detect some long-range quantum correlations. So there are examples of such trade-off. What's interesting to notice here is that if we trust that the measurement devices do the sigma z and x measurements, then this quantity, it's an entanglement witness. So if we trust the measurement device of Alice and Bob, this expression zx is bounded by square root of 2 for separable states and can reach 2 for entangled states. So it's a standard entanglement witness, but it's not a device-independent entanglement witness. If I don't trust the measurements, you know, then the bound for separable states is the same as the bound for entangled states. But so what we see here is that if we embed this entanglement witness in a rooted Bell experiment, we can actually turn it into a device-independent entanglement witness, which I think it's an interesting observation. So what about detection efficiencies? We made some analysis, thinking again, this example, which I already discussed before. This dashed curve that goes down, this was the situation according to the analysis by Chaturvedi, Viol, and Pavlovsky. The order dash curve is what you get in a standard Bell experiment. And what we see now with the proper definition is that indeed there is some improvement over standard Bell experiment. So you can lower the detection efficiency of the property that's further away if you have a high quality test in the middle. However, the improvement is not as big as they're observed in the Chaturvedi et al. Paper, okay? We get some improvement, but sufficiently smaller. In their analysis, you know, they had this nice property that the faraway efficiency could be made arbitrarily small. Could it be the case here? No. So we show that there is a simple lower bound on the detection efficiency that depends on the number of measurements that you do. So whenever the efficiency is below 1 over the number of measurements of the faraway property, you always have a classical model. So for instance, if you do 2 measurements here, when the efficiency is below 50%, there will always be a classical explanation. If you do 4 measurements, when the efficiency is below 25%, there will always be a classical model. The same bound also apply in standard Bell experiment. So you can improve things, but you cannot improve them arbitrarily. Okay, so maybe it's time to summarize. So I think these rooted Bell experiments are interesting for at least 2 reasons. One is that, you know, usually when we talk about causality and DAGs and so on in these quantum networks, we usually assume that every node is either fully quantum or fully classical. And here we have, you know, some kind of hybrid situation where some nodes, you know, controlled by this switch are either quantum or classical. Okay, so we have a situation where x is equal to s, you know, some quantum particles can go, can pass, otherwise it cannot. So it's, we have this hybrid situation, and we showed how to model it using the concept of joint majority, at least this simple example. And another reason why it's interesting is that it actually weakened, as we showed, the conditions to certify quantumness among distant parties. However, not to the extent that was originally claimed in the paper by Chetrovedi et al. So far, we have only analyzed the simplest scenario, binary variable, only a single switch, but you know, there is still much to be explored. We could consider a switch on the other side as well, maybe many switch in quantum networks, maybe even more complex kind of experiments, and maybe we can then have for improvements. So I'm going to stop here. I'm really sorry for all the interruptions. I hope that you're still able to get something out of the talk. So thank you.
Stefano, thank you for this nice talk. This is Peter Beerhorst. I looked at this paper really briefly last night in anticipation of this, and so I was wondering, is there a loophole? So I'm glad to see that you've answered that question. There is sort of a loophole. My question is, you seem to have reduced this to an asymmetric efficiency thing where one of the parties can have, if one of the parties has 100% efficiency and the other party has 50% efficiency, then you can do the experiment.
Yes.
I had vaguely remember, are there already results that use extra measurements by the two parties to achieve that sort of 100%, 50% split in asymmetric standard Bell experiment?
To my knowledge, not with qubits. So okay. In an experiment with qquads, you can have 100%, 45%, something like that.
Okay.
But not with qubits. So I think you really get an improvement.
Okay.
This root of Bell test, yeah.
So it was the higher dimensional things that achieves that thing, I vaguely remember.
But you know, maybe if we're considering these high dimensional examples here, we will also, you know, be able to go below this 45% or whatever using these root of Bell experiments, yeah.
So it's more, maybe more a remark than a question, but so there is a difficult way to do this switch, which would be to do teleportation. So you would have, instead of a switch, you do a Bell state measurement, you add the second maximally entangled state between the switch and Bob, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so we did this actually in some paper with Matty, Yvan, etc., to self-test all quantum states in networks.
Yes.
And the way we do it is we first self-test the measurement performed by the party which is far away,
mm-hmm.
and then we do the entanglement swapping to send the qubit from the source to this party which is far away. And mm-hmm. I wonder if there's a link with your switch, because actually, so this procedure of sending the qubit far away could be a switch, right?
Yeah,
but
right.
Then you violate the. Okay, I don't know if there is something around that to be understood.
So I didn't think about that, but I understand. It's a good point indeed. So it's worth looking if there is any connection. You're right. I will think about it. I didn't think that way, but it's true. Yeah. Yeah. So you also introduce some additional. Test to self-test some property of the experiment, and so it's kind of similar, it's true.
Yes.